Today's daf is as good as gold. We're holding on daf Pei Zayin, and we're right at the Gemara on the bottom of Pei Vav Amid Beis. And we just had a Mishnah that talked about the various formulations of writing to a woman that you will not take her to court for a neder or a shvua. Didn't say what type of neder or shvua. We had different formulations. If you include your yorshin, her yorshin, ba'im mikocho, if you sold, if she sold, what the din is of being a yoresh. If she was rather an apotropos on the property of the Yorshim, which is a whole different shvua over there, they can make her swear. And that we were up to the Gemara, and the Gemara's first question is, what kind of shvua are we talking about? What shvua? Shvua. Maya vidita. When you're saying a shvua, what would a woman, stam, be thinking that she would have to be nishbat, that you should write to her that you're patterning her from a shvua? Where is there a shvua? Amr vid amr rav. It means, referring to the previous Mishnah. The previous Mishnah was that if somebody makes a woman the chenvanit in his business, or an achra'it, she's the superintendent of his business. So over there, the halacha is that he can make her swear the same, and there's always a halacha on a chenvanit who's sitting at the tax register on an apotropos. So she also said, because of that, he's pottering her in case she becomes now in charge of his business. That's what it seems to be saying. He's marrying her. She doesn't want to be ever involved in that type of business unpleasantness with her husband. So she asks him to give her her ktav. Maybe that's what it's referring to. But the other case, which is the first thing that strikes us, where would a woman be chayevet shvua? As we've seen many times before, she would be chayevet where she was pogemet ktuvata. Pogemet ktuvata means that she admits that her ktuva was partially paid. So normally, if she admits that her ktuva was partially paid, as we'll see later, she has to swear in order to collect. That, it's not talking about that he potters her, because, I mean, that's something over here that she was goremet to herself. I mean, all that he means is to say, if I put you into a position, then I'm telling you that I will not create the unpleasantness of a shvua from that position. But it's not reasonable that he's pottering her from normal din, that her taina brings her to need a shvua. That's something else. In other words, I will not force you to take a shvua. If you say the type of taina in court, where the court says that's a woman that collects the shvua, that I'm not discussing. That's how Rav Yehuda Amar Rav sees it. Rav Nachman Amar Rav Bar Avua says, no, it's actually referring to a case of even a pogemet ktuvata. Certainly the case of apotropos, but that's already a thing that he's making her do, and it's an unusual case. But the chiyuvim is what he's referring to. And the first thing a woman would think about is that, look, every shvua, every ksuva, has within it the potential of bringing me to court. And, I mean, everybody thinks about this thing in the prenuptial agreement. So she's thinking to this guy. I mean, the same way that a ksuva is a ksuva, by definition it's a business document, by definition it ends up in court, if there's any kind of discussion about it. So she's thinking to herself before the marriage. She's thinking, you know what? Even with the ksuva, I want to make sure that if, in the event that I will be a pogemet, why does she think she will be a pogemet? Because she's a woman who has investments. The ksuva is worth money. She's figuring, listen, I can certainly go to my husband if I need money desperately. I don't want to borrow money from the bank, but I can go to my husband. I can say, how about if I borrow $1,000 towards my ktuva? So he gives her the money. Then, if a divorce happens before she pays, she's thinking, I'm going to end up in court, and there's going to be all kinds of things. I'm going to have to be nishba. I don't like being nishba. So she says to him, look, as part of the agreement of our ksuva, let's agree that I'm not going to ever have to take a shvua for it. That's what it's referring to. Certainly, other cases where they're doing business together, and he makes her the foreman. So for sure that's included, that he's not going to make her take a ksuva. But he's saying, I pat you from all a shvua. But he's pattering her from all types of shvuas. So Rav Mordechai, other Rav Mordechai, I heard this machlokes between Rav and Rav Bar Avua. Rav Yehuda over here was quoting Rav, Rav Nachman was quoting Rav Bar Avua. So he said it over, Tamid Rav Ashi, and it bothered him. He says, look, this is what I heard, this is machlokes. It doesn't make any sense to me, because Bishlei Melamandi Arma Lahapu Gemet Ketuvata. I understand what Rav Nachman was saying. Because that's normal. I mean, a pogemet ktuvata. Why would such a situation ever come up? Because the maska daita, look, any woman who has some type of financial dealing, so she's going to think to herself, you know, duma matzkezuse, vishakilim ktuvai. You never know, I may need money, I may need to take money from my husband against my ktuva. So she says, look, under those circumstances, I'm worried we're going to end up in court. Ktuvli delomi shabatli. But to say the way Rav Yehuda Rav was saying that it's a reference to her becoming a chenvanit, to becoming an apotropia, ashnasi b'chayabala, what? The woman's, right now she's 18 years old, in love with this guy, so she's thinking that, you never know, one day he may put me at the cash register, and then it's so difficult to believe. So the mandiyon al apotropia, ashnasi b'chayabala, Let's talk about a Mishnah where Mika Abiyadat the Motivla Pushrupia. She's gonna think now that he's gonna make her the foreman over the floor in the factory, that she should say to him, Ktovli Velomi Shabbatli. It's so difficult to believe. I mean, Pogemet Ktuvata is innate in every Ktuvah, but this is weird. Why would we think that's what it's talking about? Natosis is bothered by the question of, first of all, you're jumping to conclusions. Who says she's 18 years old in love with the guy? Maybe she's 60 years old and they just opened the business. And she's saying, look, if you want me to get involved in the business, I want you to write that. I'm not going to take the shvuah. Now, who's to say that this davka, why can't it be that she already became an apotropos? And this is the deal that they're making now? So Tosa says, because then, if we're referring to an actual case, so what do we got to make a crazy case for at all? Well, the case could be any case. You're talking about a case. So what is he saying? If the case was that she's a pogemet, it could be exactly the same case. There's no difference. If the woman's borrowing money, so she says, look, I want to borrow money for my ksuva. I want to pay you. You should pay me half of my ksuva because I need it to invest. So she'll also make such a tanaya. And so then there's no machlokas. If we're talking about a maisa shahaya, what's the machlokas? Certainly not a machlokas if she could get a ptura to be nishpat. Of course she got a ptura to be nishpat. Therefore, the Gemara takes for granted both Rav Yehuda Amarav and Rav Nachman Amarav of Aravur are both taking for granted the pashtus of the Mishnah is talking about a prenuptial. And this is the type of thing that she would think about. So what kind of woman is going to think about becoming a chanvani to an apotropia? That's why he's asking. It's unreasonable to me. To which Rav Ashi, after he listened out to Rav Mordechai's taina, to which Rav Ashi said, you know why you have problems? Because you guys got this all wrong. This was not the machlokas. Atona hamat nitula. You were taught that the machlokas between Rav and Rav Nachman over here was basically, and Rav Baravur, Rav Yehuda, and Rav Nachman, is referring to this part of the Mishnah, the first part of the Mishnah. So therefore, you're wondering, what would be the case that he would make a shvua, that she would think that she would become an apotropia? But that's not what they were arguing about. What I learned this whole discussion was regarding the very closing words of the Mishnah. Closing words of the Mishnah were, in the Sefer, Halcha mikever ba'ala lebeit aviya, or shechazra lebeit chamiya, v'lo na'aseit apotropia. So in a case where he potted her, and she went directly from her husband's funeral, never walked back into the estate to take care of it, even for a week until things would settle down. She went home to her parents, or she moved in with her in-laws. But she had nothing to do anymore with the estate. The kids were older kids, they took care of everything, and then she just walked out. So over there, she's parted from the shvua. So then, Eina Yarshim Ashminota, continues the Mishnah of Im Nasei Tapotropia. However, if she goes home from the funeral, and she is home now for a week, and the lawyers come, and they're working out everything, meanwhile she's dealing with all of the tzrachim, until things are settled. So after the dust settles, the Yoshim could be Mashbiyinota. But they Mashbiyinota not because of what he would have been Mashbiya, but for themselves. It was our property. Past week we inherited our father. During Shiva it was our money. You were the one who was being Isaac. So swear to us the regular Shvua that you swear that you weren't like every apotropos, that he didn't embezzle money. So Mashbiyinota alatid lavo, ve'ein Mashbiyinota al she'avar. So that's the Mishnah. That word she'avar, that's where I heard the machlokas is. Because what exactly does sha'avar mean? I mean, sha'avar could mean while the father was alive, is al sha'avar. Or sha'avar could mean at the time now, post the death until the kfura. Because, I mean, there's obviously, the Mishnah's left out an important time. The Mishnah talks about if she goes from the funeral, but what happened after he died until the funeral? Why are we talking about from the funeral? If Lamaisa, her husband, dies, and meanwhile, she's paying the bills, and she's in charge of the bank accounts, until they arrange the funeral. So what happened to that 24 hours? I mean, that's also apotropia. Why did the Mishnah not mention that? And then it talks about on what is the future, but not on what's before. Does what's before include the time between the death and the funeral? Or is what's before just a way of saying, before he died? Of course it's the same after. It's very strange to say it means it's inclusive. If it says, halchami kever ba'ala, it's talking about the funeral, not his death. So something's funny. That's where there was a machlokas. Where Rav Yehuda Amarav, what you thought that Rav Yehuda Amarav was referring to, a shvua b'chai about the prenuptial agreement, he was actually referring to the seifa of the Mishnah, which was Dafka explaining what it means that Yorshim cannot be mashbiyan. Is it from the funeral, from the death? So that's where Rav Yehuda Amarav said, al apotropia shenaseit b'chayei habal. That what was meant with the Mishnah's term al-sha'avar was not referring to the period between the husband's death and the funeral. It was referring to any type of apotropia that she was doing while the husband was alive. But once the husband was dead, then it's the Yorshim's property. Why can't they be mashbiya her? So aval, bein mitalik, furah mashbiyinam. You see how you got mixed up? It's the same words, but it's a completely different context. You thought that those words meant What was the mission referring to in a prenuptial agreement when he said you don't have to be mashpia, you're never going to have to be nishban? It was referring to apotropia. So I was referring to, he was talking about the end of the mission. When it says there mashpia nota al shavar, what does shavar mean? No, shavar means only apotropia, but not the time, anything that she was doing, between, even between the death and the funeral. Of course, can you after the funeral? That can be mashpia or not. Why is it an issue? What really is the difference between being nishba after the funeral or being nishba after the death? The moment the man dies, his heirs are the owners. So if they can make her swear because he can't pater her from a shvua she owes somebody else, I mean, over here she owes it to his children. What's nafkamina? You can't pater a person from making a shvua to your children. So then that's true. The moment that he dies, it's no longer his property, and he should be able to be mashbia. Oh, says Rav Mas then. This is the machlokas. Rav Mas Omar, you should know that al shavar even includes afilu bein mitalik furah. It's an unbelievable chiddush. So afilu bein mitalik furah lo mashbia ma. Despite the fact that it belongs to the Yorshim, there's no shvua. Why not? The Amri Na'adoi, because of a completely different halacha, not because he potted her. It has nothing to do with his p'tur. It's because there's a general psak by the Na'adoi that for emergency purposes, there is no din of going to the standard type of public auction when you're trying to sell off property. Normally there's a halacha that you have to advertise. You have to advertise twice a week for a month, which we do today. You'll notice that every newspaper has entire pages that are given over to the courts, people that are looking for bargains and so on. They read through those things, you know, be it known by these presences that we are auctioning a property owned by so-and-so at such-and-such a location, and you can put in a bid, and you have until such-and-such a date. That's how halacha comes from the Gemara. Because otherwise, stomp, sell a property. I mean, how do you know you're going to get the best price? So we need sealed bids, and we need to have a time in which people get a chance to examine the property, and for the word to get around. Again, very contemporary halacha. However, there are certain times, say the Na'adoi, where we need cash immediately, and not having that cash is going to be goring bad things, in which we allow you, and by the way, that also is a contemporary thing. There are times in which you put into the law that for this particular thing, you don't have to go to bid. You don't have to go to a bidding process. A bidding process can take a long time. If you're in the middle of something that's an emergency, it's a wartime thing, this happens all the time during wartime, which you need it after the war, of course, there's always suits that go on for years, and there's a famous mason. But when you go to a Boeing aircraft and you order an emergency, we need 500 fighters, and you're not going to sit and take a bid from Lockheed, but you just go and you order. Afterwards, you can tell you that they ripped you off. But Lamaisa over here, say the Na'adoi, so for karga, a karga means that you have a head tax. And they are vicious. You don't pay that tax in time. And they're about as bad as Iriat Yerushalayim with, God help us. You know, they'll come in there and destroy everything you have. So if you need money to pay karga, or for mezainis, where people mamish don't have what to eat, we're going to tell the Yarshim, well, in a month we'll be going to a bidding process. And meanwhile, I think you can hold out for a month without any food. And we don't do that. And for kfura, we need money now for the guy to be buried. So we're going to sit now, we'll have a bidding process at the end of the month, we'll get enough money together for the funeral. That doesn't make any sense. So in those cases, mazvenin and belachrazata, we do not have to go to bid, and we can sell on the spot, even though it might be a lousy deal, because we need the cash. We have to cash out, we'll accept less cash. Therefore, says Rav Masna, by the same token that we were not going to look for the best deal, and we don't have to go to bid, we also cannot insist that she take a shvua. Why? Because the shvua that generally she takes includes the fact that she was not mizalzelet and didn't accept lousy offers. It's impossible for her to say that, except as a lie. In other words, under these kind of circumstances, she's going to justify for herself. This is how Rashi learns. She's going to justify for herself that, yeah, it's true, I didn't. But it isn't. It isn't really true. But she can't start making distinctions. Look, I didn't do anything wrong. I just did what I needed. This is a standard form of the shvuah. So we can't make her take that shvuah because it'll just be gurma shvuah shaker. Tosfos says, that's crazy. Why can't we design a special shvua and have a shvua that I didn't embezzle any of the money? That's all we really want. We don't want necessarily in this case that she should say I wasn't mizalzelet. She's allowed to be mizalzelet just the same way she's allowed not to go to bed. Therefore, Tosfos, it doesn't make any sense to say that it means she won't make a shvua because we can't ask her to swear I didn't embezzle. That we could ask her. Tosfos, the problem is, this is based on the Yerushalmi, Richie. Tosfos says the problem is that if you put her into a position that she's going to have to take a shvua. You know what she's going to do? She's going to say, let somebody else take care of the kvura. I'm going home. In the same way that we don't want a kvura to be delayed, and even if it's not going to, Tosfos points out, no, but it's really going to be delayed now, the Chavra Kaddisha is really going to let the guy sit in the sun and rot. And obviously, somebody's going to pay for the kvura. But the problem is that ultimately this is going to cause a breakdown. Because people know they can't get money. Somebody will front the money for the kvura. Doesn't want it because of Bizuya Mace. But after he gets burned a couple of times, and it takes him God knows how long to get his money back, and no good deed goes unrewarded, so that in the end is going to create a halacha that in Achinami people will stop doing good deeds. That's why now there's a tremendous backlash that they put in Good Samaritan laws, what they call. Right? Chazal put good Samaritan. That's obviously the meaning is it's an oxymoron. But in any event, what they call in the States Good Samaritan laws is that if somebody's doing something good, you don't punish him for it. So he goes try to save a guy's life, and now the guy, the family wants to sue him. Well, he probably didn't know how to do CPR properly. So obviously next time he won't do CPR. Drop that. But I need to go to court and be sued to try to save his life. I won't save his life. That Tosa says this is one of those dinim. So therefore, we don't want things to get messed up for eventually. But therefore, one of the things that would get messed up is that if a woman knows that she's going to end up in court because she's taking care of her husband's kvura, or she's taking care of his yesenim, she's going to say, let the court worry about it, let somebody else take care of it, I don't want to have anything to do with it, and she'll just go home. So memela, in the order, the same way that we're careful to make sure that we have the money, we make sure that we have the person that's in charge. That's what remasa means. No, there's two separate issues here. One is the reisha of the Mishnah. What's the prenuptial agreement? That's the prenuptial. This has nothing to do. That's right. There was no such thing. And now you're all mixed up. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav wasn't even referring to the reisha. The reisha was Vanai referring to the case of Pogemet. That's the only normal case. Everybody agrees. So since Nardoi said Lekarge, Lemizoni, Lekurimaz, Bina Veloach Rezata, and therefore, it says Rav Masa, she doesn't have to swear. And when the Mishnah says that it means Mi kever ba'ala, it means bichlal. In other words, as long as there wasn't anything post the kfura that was b'chayv or not b'tropia, anything before the kfura, after the death is not a problem. Omar Rab, Omar Rabbi Chiya. If people write a shtar, very often you find rather ungrammatical constructs in a shtar, especially in those days. If you take a look at the documents that Mamashar extend, the language level in the street was not that meduyak. So if somebody says, delo nadar v'delo shvua, what does that mean? He writes a prenuptial agreement and he says, and I want you to know, there won't be no neder and there won't be no shvua. So what that means, says Rabbi Chiya, is that he will not bring her to a shvua. So who ain't yochol lashbia? But he's not telling her that his yorishim are not going to be able to be mashbia, or yorishim mashbia ota. He's just saying, between us, there won't be any nadarim. I trust you, between us, there won't be nadarim. But how about he says, naki neder, naki shvua? You will be clean of any neder shvua. And that's already much more powerful language, just like the Torah uses the language naki in the sense of naki min hachasav. We say in English, free and clear, meaning you got no interest at all in it. So then he's saying, you're free and clear of any shvua. Ben hu, ben yorsha, ben yorsha, I skipped the part. Ben hu, ben yorsha, ein mashbi'in ota. Because why? He's trying to say, I'll become a law. Menakit mishwata, you are clear, free and clear of any shvua. Rav Yosef Amar Rabbi Chiya says, on the contrary, if he says, Dolona David Alo Shvua, I agree with you, but who ain't no Yachulash Biava Yoshimash Binota. But if he would say, Naki Neder Naki Shvua, then just the opposite. Then, Bein Hu, Bein Yoshin Armash Binota. Why? Because what did he mean when he said Naki? He meant, Naki Navshech Bishwata. He meant to say, we will accept your protestations of innocence if they're accompanied with a Shvua. So, in other words, we promise you that as long as you take the standard Shvua, we're not going to sit around and keep accusing you of embezzlement and or stealing half your tzuv or whatever. Okay? Shalach Rav Zakeh Marukva, bein delo shavua, bein denaki shavua, bein delo nader, bein denaki nader. If he writes bin nechasai, then the meaning is, the main determinant over here is the word nechasai, meaning in my nechasim. But once the nechasim are not mine, they belong to my heirs, I'm not discussing that. So there, who ain't no yocholash biava yoshimash biinota. But if he writes minichsaya ilain from these properties, then he is pattering ben hu ben yoshav einash biinota. He's pattering her from any shvua that will end up being claims against this property. Omrim nachman omar shmuel mishum abashol ben imam miriam. There's even a bigger chiddush that actually what abashol said was that ben delo shvua ben denaki shvua. I don't care how he puts it. The moment that he tries to potter her, the din should have been that in terms of his meaning, I would have said, that's a ptur of a ma'ase. What am I supposed to do? Nonetheless, the chachamim made a takona that anybody who's coming to take money away from Nichsei Yatomim who don't know what happened in their father's lifetime, must make a shvua. There's a big machlokas we showed him how to learn this. Is Abishol saying that the Mishnah is wrong? No, the Mishnah says you definitely can pater. If you say Beferish, you definitely can pater the woman from a shvua even to his Yorshim. So is he disagreeing? He's saying, no, that's gufa, the takona that the Rabbanan made is a takona that he can't pater. That your, this is a schus that's given to Yorshim. He can't take away that schus. So it's not stam a normal monetary chash, which he could pater in advance. It's an actual din that they said, look, bottom line is you're coming to collect from Yisomim. Who is this guy that said you don't have to swear? The father. What if he's dead and gone? He has nothing to say about this. This is a takona de Rabbanan, which means that he would be now, I mean, he's a Tana, obviously, but he would be disagreeing with our Mishnah. Or is what it means over here, Abishol, is he's saying, unless the man says, Beferish, I pater you from, then this lashon is not enough, which is not the norm of the rove of the Rishonim. Don't say that. However, it's definitely one approach. And Abishol isn't being chaylik on the Mishnah.
Not possible that the Tzachon came later than the Mishnah?
No, but Balipara was an early Tzachon. And actually, some say that it wasn't Shmuel quoting Abishol. It was a Brisa. Ikad Amri Lava Matnita Tana. Others say that the Brisa says, Abishol ben Abba Miriam Amar, Bein de lo shua, bein de nakishua, bein de lo nader, bein naki neder, bein menechasai, bein menechasai elin, bein hu, bein yorsha, bein mashbinota. Avo ma eseh, shemru, chachamim, aboli pora menechasai yitomim, lo yiprora, ela bishvua. And in the Ikad Amri, this version, all that Rav Nachman on Mashmuel said, was halachaka, Abishol ben Miriam. Interesting the combination. Daddy Shaul and Mama Miriam. Okay, so that means, according to most Rishonim, we have a third Shita over here. That in fact, there is no way to pater a Shua to Yatamim, because it's a separate takana. Now, all along, we've been taking for granted that we know this Mishnah that we're about to learn, which is the Mishnah Pogemet Kivata. But because we've made so many reference to it. Here at last we come to the Mishnah of the din of a pogemet ketubata. A pogemet ketubata. Lo tibara ela bishvua. There's a number of cases in which a woman can collect her ketubah only by making a shvua. And we're going to explain each one of them. So case number one is where she was pogemet. Case number two is eid echad me'ida shehi prua. There too, lo tibara ela bishvua. Case number three is that if she is coming now, lipara minechsei yetomim, so over there, or minechasim mishubadim, there the halacha is also that, or it should say over here, right? Ve hanifrat shelo b'fanav is the Dior Sadabah. So ve hanifrat shelo b'fanav, lo tipara ela b'shvua. In cases where the people that are collecting do not have the ability to say, as he himself would say, that I already paid you, and if you're claiming that you want to collect this and take a shvua, then we claim it for them. So therefore, if the husband is not present, let's say he's gone overseas, and we're trying to collect out of his property, or we're collecting from his heirs, or we're collecting from somebody who bought the property, and now because she has a lien, she's going to... They can't say, because they don't know, they can't say, well, your husband paid you. But they're worried. Maybe your husband paid you. So we have a din, which we've seen many times, which is called ptach, p'tach. If a man can't say what he needs to say, we can say it for him. Since they don't know what to say. But the court says, look, if the guy were here, he might have said this. We'll say it for you. So therefore, in those cases, also she would need to take a shvua. Now, let us explain each one of these three cases. Either the pogemet ketubah, which was case number one, either a case against the neid echad, which was case number two, or hanifrat shelo b'fanav, and or liens that she's collecting where he's no longer here, and the heirs, which she's collecting from heirs, that's all the third case. But taking case number one, hapogemet ketubata keitza. Let's say that she had a ketubah of elef zuz, and he says to her, I paid you off your ketubah, yitkabalt ketubatech. And she is saying, hey, you gave me $100 towards my ketuvah once. Well, you never paid up my whole ketuvah. So lo yitkabalti ela mona. Lo tibara ela b'shvua. She can only collect her ketuvah with a shvua. Now, do not confuse this case with the din of moda b'miktzat. Because a moda b'miktzat is responding to a claim and saying they don't have to pay. Over here, she's using a shvua to collect. A moda b'miktzat is never talking about collection. So this seems to be a completely different halacha, correct? There is no din of motive of miktsas when you're trying to take money. There's only a din of motive of miktsas when you're trying to potter yourself from taking money. So this must be something else. We'll see in the Gemara whether indeed it might relate to the dinamot of the mitzvahs. Okay. That's a pogemet k'tuvata. So there she needs a shvua. What's the second case? Second case is against an eid echad. Eid echad mehidashi pru'a. Okay, so what is that case? There too. Let's say, hatak k'tuvata elav zuz. The eid comes along and says, itkabalt k'tuvatech. The omeret lo itkabalti at all. Now again, this looks like the same case as a shvua d'oraita, where you're swearing against an eid echad, right? But again, every shvua d'oraita, by definition, there's no shvua d'oraita where you make a shvua and you take money from somebody else. Simply no such animal. So therefore, the shvua d'oraita against an eid echad is where you don't want to pay. It could be mechai of you that you must take a shvua in order not to pay. So again, this is something else. The reason that it doesn't make any sense is because she is coming with a ksuva. In both these cases, she has a shtar, right? So that shtar is two eidim. Basically, every shtar is an equivalent to two witnesses. She's got a signed shtar. So if she's coming into a court with a shtar, and an eid echad comes along and says the opposite of the shtar, why should we listen to an eid echad against two eidim? Nonetheless, the halacha over here is that she does have to, we'll see in the Gemara why, that she does have to take a shvua in order to collect. What's the third case? Nechasim eshuvadim and, or heirs, or where he's not present, ketzad. So, let's take a look at the case of Nechasim eshuvadim. He went ahead and machar kol nechasav lacherim. He had sold everything that he owns to somebody else. So now she has got to collect only from property that she has a lien, and she's going to be taking it away from alakuach. She's going to take it away from a guy who spent good money on this field. Zimifrat min alakuchot. Lo tipor ala bishvua. Or, nechsei etomim. What's that case? He died. He left his nechasim to his heirs, and she's coming in ifrat min alitomim. Lo tipor ala bishvua. And the third case, shelo b'fanav ketzad. Halach lo lemininat hayah. He gives her divorce and he moves overseas. Because maybe had he been here in front of the court, he would have said, I paid you. Rabbi Shimon Omer. Now Rabbi Shimon says a very vague statement over here that doesn't seem to relate to anything that was just said above. Rabbi Shimon Omer, well, kozman shitovat k'tuvata yoshim ashbinota. But he made a tovat k'tuvata ena yoshim ashbinota. The yoshim can only make her swear when she wants her k'tuvah to be paid off. But if she's not demanding the k'tuvah to be paid off, they can't make her swear, which is a complete non sequitur. Who was ever talking about this? We're only talking about cases where she's coming to collect from the atomim. So what is he adding, Rabbi Shimon? That the Gemara will discuss. Exactly. No. And normally she doesn't collect the ketuvah right away. She just lives off of the estate. The moment she demands a ketuvah, she has to move. We had that earlier. But who said the any different than what Rabbi Shimon is saying? So the Gemara is going to wonder, what's he responding to here? Now, Rami Bar Chama was learning the Mishnah. He said, okay, this first halacha, in which if she's a pogamet, and she says, well, I got $100 towards the $1,000. He said, l'chara, that's a shvua d'oraita. Now, a shvua d'oraita is more chomer than a shvua d'rabbanan. And a shvua d'oraita, you can't be mapich the shvua. Rashi says later, although Tosfos argues on it, that a shvua d'oraita, you would have to take benikitat chefetz, you have to use the Shem Hashem, or you have to use a kinui, which later on Tosfos argues that's true about a shvua d'rabbanan also. But okay, but let's, right here Rashi says the issue will be whether you can be mapich the shvua. So mapich shvua means let the other side swear and ponder themselves in this case. Can't be mapich the shvua. The katoin matayim, it seems to him, says Rami Bar Chama, it seems to be a case of meidah b'mitzvahs, right? I mean, he's tining matayim, or in this case 1,000, and she's tining the kamod elo b'meya, havalei hodo b'mitzvah tata'ana, v'kol hamod b'mitzvah tata'ana, yishava. Says Rava, what? How could anybody make such a mistake? Shtei tshuvot b'davar. First of all, kol ha'nishbaim shebetorah nishbaim v'lo mishami. That it says b'feresh in the Mishnah, in Shavuos. If somebody's taking a shvua d'oraita, it only applies to pottering yourself, not to taking money from somebody else. All those shvuas are derabbanan. So she is talking about making a shvua and collecting. So how could that possibly be a shvua d'oraita? Furthermore, even if we get around that, and you're telling me, but it's shvua d'oraita. There's no such thing as a shvua d'oraita on karkaot, which you learn from a pasuk. So therefore, since over here what we're talking about is collecting, the entire ketuvah is based on liens against property. So how can you take a shvua on a lien against property? So the case over there is always that Enish Bainal Kirachi Ibut Karkaot. How could you have thought that this is Shvud Yeraisa? Actually, many learned that Rami Bar Chama didn't mean Mamish Shvud Yeraisa, but that it was a Drabbanan based on Halacha, Modeh B'Mikzas, to extend Modeh B'Mikzas into, in other words, he meant it's modeled on the Shvud Yeraisa. But since it was misunderstood, he obviously knew that also, Rava was responding to people who misunderstood what it was that Rami Bar Chama was saying. That they thought he meant it's literally a D'oraisa. He says, it's definitely not literally a D'oraisa.
It's not as a cut from him, but a clarification.
It's a clarification, yeah. Elam Rava, look, the whole thing over here is a D'rabbanan. Why would the Rabbanan make a Shvua over here in such a case? If they're not modeling it after the Din HaMoed HaMikta. Because the Pora Dayak, the Mithra Lo Dayak, a guy who's paying off a debt, he's careful to write down everything that he paid. He knows exactly how much he paid. But the guy who's being paid, he always likes to believe he's still owed a lot more than he's really owed. Right? This happens very often. You're getting money back, and like you didn't realize, you basically got back all the money. It was in dribbles. So like now, you know, you kept thinking, hey, the guy owes me $1,000. I mean, the fact is that 20 different occasions, you took a little bit of money from him that already covered the whole loan, and you think, Stummy still owes me $600, $700. It's no use. So because of that, Roma Rabbanan Shvu'ala, the Rabbanan made her chayevet, that she was only going to be able to collect with the Shvu'a, kiyechet teta, because they want her to be medayeket. Iboilo, how about pogemet tuvata be'edim? How about if she says, listen, I got only 100 of my ketuvah, and you know that there are witnesses, but two witnesses that saw you pay me. Let's bring the witnesses into court. The witnesses say, we saw him pay only $100. He says, well, of course, but what about the other times that I paid her? So she is timing. You know what, one time you paid me with Adim, and the other times you didn't pay me with Adim? It's very suspicious. So there the question is like this. Now, imita de par'a be'edim. Do we say, well, if he had really paid her back, we know that he paid her back once at least with Aiden, so that means he's being careful to pay back with Aiden so that he has a legal record of it. So then why should we believe him when he says, I also paid you Shalom Bifne Aiden. If you were careful to have Aiden once, you probably would have been careful to have Aiden a second time. Dilma, or maybe we should say, who said he was careful to have Aiden? Maybe it happened to be Aiden were there, that's all. So Dilma Yisramu Yisramile. But it doesn't mean that he thought that she would eventually deny that he paid her, maybe he trusted her. Toshma. Let's see if we can bring a riot from the following. Kol ha-nishpahim shabat Torah nishpahim v'lo mishalmi. Ve'elu nishpa... Very dangerous. Very dangerous, because by definition you expose your neck in that position. Elu nishpahim v'notli. The following. The Rabbanu made a takana that they can make a shvua and they can take money. A sakhir. So a guy that was hired by you to work, he claims you never paid him. You say you did pay him. Over there the Rabbanu were metakein. Because normally, a guy who is paying a balabayit has got a lot of things on his head besides your salary. The sakhir, that's all he's got on his head. So because of that, we trust him and the balabayit. He's paying 100 different people today. He thinks he paid the painter, but actually that wasn't the painter. That was the carpet layer. So the painter comes along and says, where's my money? Didn't I pay you? No. Also something happens all the time. So they made a takana that a sakhir can pay, can collect rather with a shvua. Hanigzal, the case of hanigzal is... The Sahir swears and takes. All these cases are swearing and taking. A nigzal, a guy says to somebody, pay me back what you stole from my house. Stole? Me? Witnesses come and they say, well, I don't know, it's very interesting. The guy walked into the house with nothing and he came out of the house with two suitcases. So the victim says, you see, I have witnesses. Ah, says the robber, did you see what was in those suitcases? Did he eat it? They were empty suitcases. I'll pay you back the suitcases. No. So in that case, the nigzal is able to say what was in the suitcases. It's a takana. And the gazlanim will have to pay up.
It happens with airlines all the time.
That's true. That's very good. That's right. And they talk made a takana. It's interesting. Also, they have the concept of omid. You know, if you say a reasonable thing that a person like you would have, they'll pay you for it. If you say something unusual, make a case out of it. So, also, a case of a nechbal. The case of a nechbal is, a guy walks into a house, in which there's one other guy with him. And he looks perfectly healthy. He comes out of the house limping and bleeding. There's no witnesses to what happened, but there's only one person who could have done it. So the person who's now being claimed against, he says, what do I mean? The guy bumped into the refrigerator. So then over there is that he can also be nishba and be naito. And a case where shekenegdocha shuda la shvua, so somebody's mechuyav a shvua, and he can't take a shvua, so chazal remetaken, okay, so you make a shvua, and you take. V'chenvani al pinkaso, that's a wild case where a guy tells a person who is that he's friendly with him, has a story, has an account in the story, he says, look, I got 10 pickers working in my field, and I can't be bothered by it, give each one of them an account, let them take up the 10 shekel a day, and they can put it on my account. So v'chenvani comes at the end of the month with a 3,000 shekel bill, And the workers say, He never gave us anything. He refused to give us anything. We had to pay for everything out of our own money. So you owe us. You owe us all that money. The din over there is, he owes both of them. The Chenveni makes a shvur on his pinkas that he gave them, and he owes the Chenveni. But he owes them also, because they say that he never paid. They never accepted that they have to believe him if he says it was through the Chenveni. The hapogim shtaro, shalov edim, a person who says that indeed it is true what you're saying, that this shtar was partially paid, but it was only partially paid. So over there, it'll have to be nishpa to be no tell. If there were no witnesses. What do you mean, if there were no witnesses? And if there were witnesses, then no?
Then there'd be no
witnesses. And Eidim lo? No, I mean, even without witnesses. No, me boy karma. In other words, if there were Eidim, that money was already paid to him, so then Vada Tzrich HaShvut, I understand. But I would have thought that Shaloba Eidim falls into the category of the Good Samaritan laws. Because another one of a famous example of the Good Samaritan law is a case where a guy finds a wallet. The wallet's got $500 in it. He returns the wallet. Most wonderful guy in the world. But the guy, the owner of the wallet, sues him for stealing the other $500 that were in the wallet. Right? So the din is, if somebody returns an Aveda, he never has to swear in court for you. Thank you very much for returning it. We're certainly not going to tell you no good deed goes unpunished. So that was one of the takonas we made. So anything that falls into that category does not have to swear. So you would have thought, a guy who says, it's true, you paid me some of my shtar, and there's no witnesses. He's basically returning a guy's wallet. It's very nice of him to return the wallet. We're going to make him swear. He could have said, I don't know what you're talking about. You never paid me. So why should he have to be nishba? So that's what he's saying. Even if it's shalom aid him, it's not kameshiva veda. You would have thought, ema kameshiva veda v'tishko b'lo shvua. Kamashma, then it's not. Now, how about Iboil? Apogemel tuvata pachot pachot mishava pruta. Remember that the whole halacha is that the person who is being paid is not midayeket. And therefore, Chazal were mitakein that she should be midayeket, right? Suppose when she comes to collect the ktuvah, she presents an Excel spreadsheet in which she has every single payment over the past 25 years down to a tenth of a cent. So she even writes pachas mishava pruta. She says, you paid me $20 and .0013 cents. At such and such a date. So he looks at the whole cheshbon, and it's exact, but it says, gee, I thought I paid you the whole cheshbon. So, I mean, maybe in such a case where she obviously is medayeket, so now, me and Rina given the kadaika kule hi. So we shouldn't make a takana that a person who is medayeket should swear kushtaka amra. Oh, Dilma, or maybe that's a brilliant move. You want to show how medayeket you are. So you create, like every good accountant, you create a fudged spreadsheet, and it's down to the last 1,000th of a penny, you know. But it's all fake. So it's just haroma. Take it. Okay. Iboilo. How about a case where she's not a pogemet k'tuvata? She's a pochetet k'tuvata. What's the case of pochetet k'tuvata? She says, I didn't get paid, but you're right insofar as my k'tuva is actually worth only half of the face value of the shtar. So even though the shtar says my k'tuva is 1,000, it's true that my k'tuva was really only 500. But as far as your claim is concerned that you paid off, Mark, you never gave me a dime.
Because of a deal?
We'll see what the deal is. We'll see how it's possible in a moment. So do we say, Mal, Mika, Amrin, Hainu, Pogemet? Do we say, okay, that is the same. What's an afkamina? If she says, yes, it's true you paid, or she says, yes, it's true you don't owe me that much because the k'tuva is really worth less than women. Is that the same thing? Or maybe the Pogemet is still based around the idea of motive and mix-up. In which what you say is true is not as true as you said it's over there. Understand, we do have precedent for taking that as a basis for making a shvua. But in this case, she's not agreeing at all. He says, I paid you, and she says, you didn't pay me a penny. So maybe over there, we don't have a takana to make it the same as pogemet. A pogemet is not a pochetet. Ha, look, about even mix it. The pochetet k'tuvat has not been muda. Matzalach. Tashma, pochetet iparasha lo bishvua. Ketzat. Well, let's say her k'tuva on the face value is 1,000. And he says to her, look, I paid you the full value. And she says, I didn't get a penny. But what is true is that the k'tuva was really only for $100, not for $1,000. But you didn't pay me any of it. In elamona. So in that case, she's nifrat shelo b'shvua. Says the Gemara, look, in all of these cases, what was our problem of the shvua? Basically, the woman is coming with a shtar, right? So how can you deny the value of the shtar? Okay, so we had explanations for how you can deny the value of a shtar, we made a special takana, so on and so forth. She's not midayaket, all of the cases above. Problem is that in this case we're saying that the pochetet does not have to be nishbad. Why? Because she has a shtar. No, she doesn't. She's admitting that the shtar is not a real shtar. She's saying, oh, that piece of paper that says 1,000, look, that the truth is that's not a kosher shtar. My ksuba was only for 100. The shtar is a lie. One is what we think is that they did one of these modern ksuvas in which they're trying to show off. So they had a lot of people do that. So they put in the ksuba that she was machnes in $3 million and he was meisiv midilei and it's worth $6 million. Nonsense. She had nothing. She had a couple of sheets, and some pillowcases. But now, if I can't avoid the occasion, they make it sound very. That's what we thought it meant.
I only officiated for half a million.
Right. So if that's the case, then it's not a kosher shtar at all. It's just a lie. So how in the world we're saying she could collect without a shtar? She should be able to collect at all. She has no shtar. He's saying that he paid. On what basis is she collecting the shtar? This is a piece of garbage. That's all. It's just a piece of paper. Omar Rabba, Berei de Rabba. No. This is a perfectly kosher shtar. Meaning that indeed they brought Adim and he was mischayev like in every ksuva for $10,000. Except that he trusted her and he said to her, look, we can't make a not kosher ksuva. It's a kosher ksuva. However, to shtar amana, with a shtar amana, you make a real shtar. The Adim are told and see the transaction and they sign. In which he is Kena, yes, I'm Ischaya for this ksuva. However, he says to her, look, I mean, this is what I'm going to do, but I'm trusting you not to really sue me for the whole amount. You know, we want people to feel that I gave you that amount of money, but you're promising me that you're never going to demand that amount of money. So over here, when he divorces her, she keeps her promise. And she says, that's what it says, but I agreed that it should say that, but I will never use it to collect the full amount. So now it's not a chas b'yama. It's a perfectly kosher shtar that she can use. But since she's not being made of a mikvah over here, so maybe therefore she should be, therefore, I mean, we're passing, she's demanet without a shvuah. So it's talking about over here, we had an agreement between ourselves, but the shtar is a kosher shtar.
And he's not denying that. That would make it.
No, he's not denying that. I mean, it's in his family, of course. Yeah. Eidachad, the next case we had, is an Eidachad Midashi Parua. So again, Rami Bar Chama said, okay, this sounds exactly like the case of the Shvua D'Oraisa, where somebody says you owe me $100, and here's my witness. So if he has two witnesses, obviously he collects. If he has one witness, so then he can make you take a Shvua. Take a look, what's in that though?
Isn't the written word more than... Then I loved you, so I agree, but now I hate you, so I will sue you for the full amount.
What are you talking about, the previous case?
Yeah, case.
We're past that case, we're not in the new case.
No,
you can't go back to the old case. You were drinking the tea before, what's your amatra? I'll speak afterwards about it. So Rami Bar Chama said, okay, this is a classic case of an Eidach, you bring Nishma against an Eidach, it's a Shvud Yoraita. Dichtiv lo yakum Eidach ha-bishul kol avonu l'chol chatat. What does the Torah say an Eidachad is useless for? L'kol avonu l'kol chatatu deino kam. You can't paskin against him in a criminal case. Avokamu l'shvua, you can paskin against him for mamanis to be mechayev you l'shvua. V'omar mar, kol makom sh'ashnayim mechayevim oto mamon, echad mechayev l'shvua. So this sounds like as if there had been two witnesses that it was parua, so you wouldn't be able to collect. So if there's one that says it's parua, so then you collect with a shvua. Right? Says Rava, no, wrong. Shtei tshuvas b'davar. It's exactly what I told you before. First of all, kol anishpaim shebetorah nishpaim v'lo misham. And in this case, she is now being a nishpat and no telet based on this ketuvah. So it couldn't possibly be a shvud yoraisa. Another reason it can't possibly be a shvud yoraisa is because v'od ein nishpain al tfirat she'ibut karkaot, as I told you before. There's no such thing as a shvud yoraisa on a claim against property. And that's basically what's happening over. It's a claim against property. It's not possible that it's a deraita. Ela amar rava, actually, it's drabonah. Rabbanan made this shvua. K'dei l'hafiz da'ato shalabal. We want a person to feel that he's not helpless. Not helpless. He writes her ksuva every single time. It's the, basically the helpless feeling that men have today in divorce cases. It always goes for the women. Whatever she says, the court's always going to be merakim on the women. Has to do with custody, has to do with payments, whatever it is, somehow or other, they're always right.
You're together.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. So in order that men should not be put into that position, so at least they were mitakein. Again, amazing the contemporary power of these things. So they were mitakein that she would have to be nishbat, even though she has a kosher shtar against the eight. Amar Papa. Says Rav Papa, you should know that if this guy, yeah, I will do it tomorrow. It's really late.